Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Our first hour is all about adventure, starting with the time-bending saga of Future Man, now in third and final Hulu season. Creators and executive producers Kyle Hunter, Ariel Shafir, and Ben Carlin join me next in an internet radio exclusive. Next, we check in with Almost Paradise, a law and semi-order series set and filmed in the Philippines. Episode 2 plays tonight on WGN America, and you'll hear executive producer Dean Devlin later this hour. And then we'll explore the way the gay and lesbian communities have been showcased throughout this medium, the subject of Apple TV's acclaimed docuseries, Visible Out on Television. Our final half hour features Stephen Capsudo, Visible's lead historical consultant, and author of the brand new book, Alternate Channels. Also ahead, news notes and your chance to win Alternate Channels through our classic trivia segment. Hey everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get 3 free books when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Great to have you aboard on this Monday afternoon for the program All About Television. 63 degrees at the top of this hour. We have a jam-packed 90 minutes in store for you. Great guests all the way through, and we invite you to be interactive with us. All it takes, pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. Our chat room is open as well, already some people in it. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you can find it at our homepage. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or the room. Either way, you get interactive with us. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk, Spreaker, or TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be connected with you. And we will connect shortly with the trio behind Future Man on Hulu, Kyle Hunter, Ariel Shafir, and Ben Carlin, all joining us live from the Los Angeles area after these news notes. For the first time in several weeks, a scripted television series has gone back into production despite the coronavirus pandemic. All Rise, CBS's Monday Night Courtroom drama in its first season, will film an episode from non-studio locations using a number of video conferencing applications such as WebEx and FaceTime. The episode will play on CBS May 4th. 3 leading broadcast networks, CBS as well as ABC and NBC, will connect for a coronavirus fighting special presentation on April 18th. One World, Together at Home, will spotlight community health and medical professionals worldwide and raise funds for their needs in facing this pandemic. Each network's late-night star, Stephen Colbert from CBS, NBC's Jimmy Fallon, and ABC's Jimmy Kimmel, will co-host the two-hour special, supported by a variety of musical and entertainment celebrities from Lady Gaga to Stevie Wonder. TuneIn Radio will simulcast One World, and other television networks may participate prior to April 18th. Stars and Curtis 50 Cent Jackson continue to expand their TV series relationship. Earlier today, stars greenlighted Black Mafia Family, an 8-episode scripted study of drug trafficking. That's the 5th series Jackson is handling at Stars since Power completed its popular run there a few months ago. 4 Power spinoff series and one with Mary J. Blige, starting with Book 2, that's the one she is in, are in the works. Now some quickies. No ATX TV Festival in Austin, Texas this June. A virtual group of events will substitute. A foundation named after Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry will award $100,000 in grants to TV projects and concepts promoting positive social change. Popular FX adult film Archer will move its 11th season premiere date from May 6th to a date to be announced. And James Jury, the star of The Virginian, the longest-running 90-minute drama series in television history, died earlier today of natural causes. One of his last live interviews was on this very program last decade. You can hear that episode at www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. It was one of the most very special episodes I've had in the 12 and a half years we've done this program. James Jury, the Virginian, was 85. And that is news notes for today. Hulu kicked off its third and final season of its popular unique series Future Man over the weekend, and right now we've got the 3 people involved in making it happen. Joining us live from various places in the Los Angeles area, creators and executive producers Kyle Hunter, Ariel Shafir, and Ben Carlin. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much.
Hey.
It is a pleasure to have
Very
all of you. By the way,
we
have another person that's joining our chat room, so if you have a question or comment, put it in the room or make the call, 646-652-2906. Kyle, we'll start with you. How have things been going on Season 3?
Fantastic. It was sort of a change of pace in the final season. We filmed the first two seasons in Los Angeles area, and then we got to go abroad to Montreal, and it really gave us a nice change of pace and change of scenery, and it was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Ariel, did you know beforehand that this was going to be the last season, and how did the fact that once you knew about it, how did it determine how all three of you worked on the episodes?
We knew that this was going to be the last season, and in a way, it was helpful knowing that it was the last season because it enabled us to just kind of figure out how we wanted to end the whole thing and work backwards from there. So it actually made things easier in a way, knowing that it was going to be over.
Mm-hmm. Ben, you did the first episode. What was your thinking about it? It's called The Precepts of Yesterday, Precipice of Yesterday. It was on starting on Friday and continued over the weekend. Given the idea that you're doing the season opener, what was your inspiration for it?
Well, you know, everything's collaborative. I mean, we just kind of assign the scripts because someone's got to write the scripts. But when you work in a TV comedy room, you just spend so much time collaboratively figuring out, you know, the story for every episode, the whole season, you know, jokes. I mean, people's names have to go on a script, but it's almost random how we assign it, really, because we're doing so much work around a table as a group.
And your script, by the way, deals with the decathlon. Was that inspired by something personal, or you like the Olympics so much, that particular event?
last season we ended the season on a little bit of a, you know, cliffhanger where our characters were, they thought they were in prison, but it turned out that they were just contestants on a reality show where they were going to be hunted to death called the Dicathlon. So we kind of owed at least one episode in the Dicathlon because that's how we ended last season. Because our star Josh Hutcherson was also a star of the Hunger Games, which also shares some similarities with that, we thought it was a nice area for us to kind of explore some comedy.
It sounds like it's also been inspired by the episode of the movie The Most Dangerous Game, very famous movie in the early 1930s with Joe McRae, but you sort of seem to have a little takeoff on that.
Yes, you know, the humans being hunted for sport is not a new idea. We tried to add our little bit to the canon, but yeah, no, that idea has definitely been around for sure.
Kyle, for people who are tuning in for the first time to hear about Future Man, how did all three of you come together to do this?
Originally, this started as a feature project, actually, that Ariel and I were writing and developing over the years. But ultimately, we figured, you know, time travel, it was sort of a rich area to explore on TV. So, and ultimately, Ariel and I had come up in features and had never done a TV show before. And we'd known Ben Carlin for years. We worked on a movie 50-50 together years before that. And we'd sort of collaborated and been friends. And he's obviously very experienced in the television arena. So he was an obvious choice to ask to, you know, help shepherd this project with us. It was very organic.
We're speaking with the trio that makes Future Man happen in its third and final season on Hulu, available on smart TV sets and smart TV sets all over the place. We're talking about Kyle Hunter, Ariel Shafir, and Ben Carlin, all over the fly from the Los Angeles area this half hour. All to you on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Kyle and I'm with you on the program All About Television. Good to have you open the week with us here live on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. We're also on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you have a question or comment for our guests, don't be shy. Use that phone, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04. Get that tongue untied by name. This is the first of two 98 episodes we're doing this week. We have another one coming your way to wrap the week up on Friday, and we got another good variety of guests for you. First up, we'll have Nancy Pitatore with us. She has Players Media Group, and they just launched a new service involving sports celebrities called Players TV. We'll talk to her about this new service, also available on smart TV sets and devices. We'll also talk to her about the growing number of athletes from all over the place who are forming their own production companies, like LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, et cetera, et cetera. And then, while Wayne Brady's getting ready for the 11th season of Let's Make a Deal on CBS, there's a brand new series launching this week on BYU TV. That's the cable network across the country from Brigham Young University. We've covered them in the past. And the show is called Wayne Brady's Comedy IQ. We'll meet the executive producers, Michelle Collins and Kevin Dill. And finally, from the new Nickelodeon series, Danger Force, the spinoff of the popular Henry Danger, creative and executive producer, Christopher Nowak. It's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Ariel, how did you develop, all three of you, develop the idea of a time travel series where time continually goes out of whack?
It was really challenging. I don't know. We had a lot of arguments trying to work it out, and you know, trying to put some firm logic behind the time travel. And you know, we did as good a job as we could, but it's maddening. You know, time travel doesn't really exist, so. It's hard to come up with the rules for these things, and but we did our best, and hopefully it makes sense to viewers.
Then how long did it take for all three of you to get the cast together and to get the chemistry together for this?
Well, you know, you cast it's the process of making a TV show. You know, you cast the pilot, and you're just kind of hoping, unless the people have worked together before, you're just kind of hoping that there'll be some chemistry, because you know, more often than not, it's the cast that you're putting together hasn't worked together before. We had some familiarity with Derek Wilson because he had worked on the show Preacher, which is another show that Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg produced, so we were familiar with Derek's work, and you know, Eliza and Josh had worked with Seth before on a movie called The Disaster Artist, so there was a little bit of familiarity. But even so, when you start up, you're kind of just guessing, and you think, okay, this is what we're going to be doing, here's what's going to be funny and interesting about how these characters interact. And then once you kind of get the material up on its feet, you realize, oh, okay, no, these strengths are different. And that's why so many shows' pilots aren't the best episodes, because you're kind of learning as you go about the strengths of your actors. So we figured out a dynamic that made sense pretty quickly for us, and then we started writing to it. But, you know, it's definitely a process, and a lot of times you just have to see it.
Incidentally, a couple more people have just joined our chat room. Simon Apple 0418. So welcome aboard. If you have a question or comment for our guests, put them in the room, or use that phone, 646-652-2906. We're looking for you to be interactive with us. Kyle, you and Ariel wrote the second episode that is on this coming week called There Will Be Borscht. And what does that have to do? Is that in time for Passover, which is for a lot of people starts on Wednesday?
Absolutely. Our minds always go to Passover. That's how we usually start our process. That episode we had to have some fun with, because we really got to – I mean, the last season of Future Man, all our characters sort of jumped to the future, and we sort of dealt with sort of the ramifications of the future they created and having them live with the consequences. But, you know, this season we got to go back to, you know, jumping around in time and having more fun, you know, with those concepts. And this episode we've jumped to more places than almost any other times in the series. I think we jumped to like 5 or 6 different time periods. So it was fun. We you know, it's sort of like a fugitive story we got to tell, and sort of set up the A story of these three time fugitives who are basically on the run trying to hide throughout time. But yeah, it was a wild episode.
Yeah, the Borscht is just because they end up in Russia.
Oh boy. And what do they have to do? They have to deal with a new foreign government that they got to try to overthrow, or what?
No, they're just hiding out and trying to you know, live an honest life for a little bit, working on a poor woman's farm. But then, as you might guess, trouble eventually ensues.
Kyle, the next episode after this one, called Trapper's Delight, has a nice feature to it because it's written by Joel Church Cooper, and those, a lot of people in the know him as the creator of Brockmire, which is also going into its final season this year on IFC. We had one of the Mo Morabo, the executive producer and director of the show, last week. He's really wonderful. I've loved Brockmire from the start. Hank Azaria's fantastic performance. Was it very easy to get him to do an episode at least?
It's funny. Yeah, we met with him for the first season of the show, actually, and for one reason or another it didn't work out, and he wasn't able to do it. I guess his responsibilities, obviously, show running and doing everything on Brockmire, but yeah, the timing just happened to work out on the second season, and he came in for half of the writers' room period, and he's just like a dynamo in the writers' room. And He's one of the most, definitely one of the most talented writers. And we're lucky in the third season that the timing worked out as well. So, yeah, we love Joel.
There's one, I just want to add in that there's one scene in particular in that third episode that we didn't even, come up with in the room. Joel went off to script and wrote this entire run about toddler bombs, which takes place in that episode, which is unbelievable. And yeah, shout out to Joel Church Cooper for being just an incredible, incredible writer. All our writers are incredible, but yeah, that was a special one.
Yeah. And if you haven't seen the new season of Brockmire, do see it Wednesday night on IFC. It's a wonderful show, and you will love Hank Azaria's performance. Maybe this is the year that he finally gets an Emmy nomination, and maybe even the Emmy Award for that performance, somehow, some way. It's really, really sensational. Great cast. And again, Mo Morabo was on our show last week. Check out the episode on our podcast at blogtalkradio.com, televised, tunein.com, iHeartRadio.com as well. For all three of you, growing up, did you see a lot of science fiction or speculative shows dealing with time travel, like Quantum Leap, The Time Tunnel, Voyagers, even like shows like Lost in Space, which sometimes had time, or Star Trek that had time travel episodes?
Yeah, I think all of us were very influenced, probably more by movies, movies like The Terminator and Back to the Future, which are kind of like in our wheelhouse from our childhood. I had a soft spot for Voyagers. I think Kyle and Ariel watched more Quantum Leap than me. But certainly that was very much a kind of a mainstay of, kind of a big, fun idea for movies for us. And that's certainly the show is a love letter to that.
Ben, talk about working with your three stars, Josh Hutcherson, Eliza Coop, and also Derek Willis. You mentioned that earlier. What do they bring? What does each person bring to their character and to bring to your writing?
I mean, it's incredible when you have a cast that, not just, elevates the material, but is, really incredibly pleasant and nice to work with. I mean, we really lucked out, starting with Josh, who, is kind of the star of the show, although it really became a three-person, kind of monster. But Josh, who didn't have a big background in comedy, but had showed some comedic chops and some other stuff, but we were taking a little bit of a risk doing a comedy with him. And not only is he, an amazing actor, but I think the thing that that we just appreciated and loved about him so much is that he was so game. He was so willing. So many actors, especially if you haven't come up in comedy, you're not really willing to make yourself look foolish because it's embarrassing. But for comedy, you kind of have to play the fool sometimes. And he was so trusting of us and really was game to try anything we gave him, which really is an incredible relationship to have with your star. And I think, for a lot of people, discovering Derek, who was probably the most unknown of the three coming into it, was a real joy for people. And we were able to kind of people didn't come into Future Man with a preconceived notion of what kind of person or what kind of actor Derek Wilson was. So he really, really surprised people. And that was a real discovery and a lot of joy for people to kind of figure out who he was. And Eliza is a veteran. She's a veteran of sitcoms. She's so funny. There was almost nothing we could give her that she couldn't make funny. So we were just, you know, absolutely thrilled with the cast. That we felt very lucky.
We got a great trio coming your way this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Kyle Hunter, Ari Shaffir, and Van Carlin, all from the popular Hulu series Future Man, now in its third and final season. Hulu, of course, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices all over the place. We're with us live in Los Angeles this half hour on your program All About Television, and we want to hear from you in our remaining minutes with them. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And we're just getting started this Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised. In our next half hour, we've got the person behind such popular TNT series as Leverage and The Librarian, the co-creator of Stargate, which became a whole big TV franchise beside a very popular movie. And now we've got a brand new TV series going into its second episode tonight on WGN America, Dean Devlin from Almost Paradise, the executive producer of that series. And then coming up in our final half hour, we'll speak with Stephen Capsudo. He was the lead story consultant on the popular Apple TV Plus series Visible, out on television, depicting how gays and lesbians, transgenders, etc., have been portrayed on television for decades. He also just came out with a brand new book called Alternate Channels, otherwise known as Queer Images on 20th Century Television. And stay tuned, you have an opportunity to win that book, a copy for yourself, in our new classic trivia question. So stay tuned. That's all coming up in the hour ahead. Kyle, what can we expect in terms of the remaining series episodes, in terms of the kind of adventures our trio gets into?
Quite a bit. we had 8 episodes to sort of wrap up the story a bit. But, I mean, ultimately, it's a fugitive story through time where they're trying to lay low, but for, you know, reasons, under their control and not, they're sort of tracked down to this place. But, they find themselves in a pretty strange place that's, I won't say out of time, but in a place where, you know, time sort of messes with their brains a bit and have to, you know, get back on mission, and the team basically has to regroup and get back with each other for one final mission.
And Ari, I was thinking of that final mission or this final season of the series. What was it like to do the last episode?
Sorry, can you repeat that? I did not hear that.
Yeah, given the fact this is, you know, the final season of the series, the proverbial question comes up, how did you handle the final episode? Was there a lot of, we got to do this, we got to do that. We're under pressure to create, like, the best final episode of this kind of show ever made. And how did it go to actually get the final episode in a can?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of pressure knowing that it was the final episode. And also, you know, add to that the pressure that our trio needs to save the universe, which isn't... no laughing matter. So, we had to save the universe and then also wrap up their stories individually, which was a tall order, but I feel like we did it, and the three of us are really happy with how it turned out. And then we even threw in just like a final joke at the very, very end of the series that hopefully people are enjoying.
Ben, what has it been like for all three of you to work with people like Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, who have now become big television entrepreneurs as well as film people?
Well, Seth and Evan, were longtime friends for Kyle and Ariel. I met them, professionally, quite some time ago. But the dream, especially in the entertainment industry, is to work with your friends, and if you can do that and your friends are talented and you're kind of, you're making interesting, you're doing interesting work and you get to work with your friends, it's kind of, I think, what everyone strives for. You don't always get that. But that's like the highest possible kind of goal, is to do interesting work with people that you really like, personally and professionally. So that's kind of been the biggest win for us, I think, over the last few years, is being able to work together as friends.
Mm-hmm. Have you figured out what your next TV chapter is going to be?
I'm got some irons in the fire. I have a few ideas. You know, when you work on a show, it's so all-consuming. It's very hard. You know, I'm not the type of person who has, like, the bandwidth to have lots of little side hustles going on. I'm kind of all in on what I'm working on. So over the course of the last few years, I've pocketed a few ideas that I thought would be kind of fun or interesting to do after Future Man. So, you know, you there's kind of two modes when you're a writer in Hollywood. You know, you're either working or preparing to work. So we've been working the last few years, and now it's time to go into a mode to kind of prepare to work.
In the meantime, I'm just going to let them. Oh, by the way, what's been your reaction so far to season 3? You've had a couple of days to get the social media reaction, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, whatever. What are people saying to all three of you?
I mean, I don't know. From what I've read, it's been overwhelmingly positive, which is definitely nice to see after we put in a year of work on something. And for the most part, like, the three of us write, sometimes it feels like we write and make this show just for the three of us. So whenever someone actually watches it and enjoys it and understands it, it's gratifying.
Yeah. We kind of liken it a little bit to, you know, there are people who like the show and they really seem to like it and appreciate it. And it kind of occupies this weird little kind of culty place where most of the people like it. Their number one comment is, I don't understand why more people don't like this. So we're kind of happy to just have, like, these kind of loyal, dedicated fans who seem to really, really like the show. And you know, the reaction has been very, very gratifying.
Yeah, it seems like for people who do like the show, I'm seeing a lot of, like, I only have one friend that I could recommend this show to. So it's a little niche.
Mm-hmm. Well, the great news is there's still time to become a fan of Future Man, and the way you do it is you check out Hulu, which has the series in its third and final season. Don't forget that Hulu is available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices all over the place. And for more details about the program online, go to Hulu.com. That's Hulu, H-U-L-U.com. Future Man, season 3 and final season, now running on Hulu. Kyle Hunter, Ariel Shafir, Ben Carlin, Crazy Executive Producers, thank you all three for joining us. It's been a delight all the way. Congratulations on the run of your show, and hopefully we will hear more from you with something new down the road.
Thank you.
You are all very welcome. Take care. All the greatest.
Bye now.
Kyle Hunter, Ariel Shafir, and Ben Carlin all joining us live from the Los Angeles area this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. More on the Pro Bowl Television coming your way, but first the words from the fine folks at Audible.com. If you're a J.K. Rowling Harry Potter fan, there's a brand new audiobook out you can get through Audible.com as part of your trial run. It's called The Tales of Beto the Bard. It's an interesting project that J.K. has been using to raise money for various charities in England. And now you can hear it anytime you like through a one-month trial at Audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and by far, inspiration. Boy, do we need it now. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn, or iHeartRadio. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. You get 3 free audiobooks, 1 month trial, and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And don't forget, 2 of those free audiobooks come from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. That's everything from original audio productions, the best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, and great one-woman and one-man solo performances. So hear for yourself how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. Just sign up now at audibletrial.com/televised. You're listening to Tomorrow Be Televised. We are the program all about the tube. We're with you Mondays and Fridays live, usually an hour, sometimes 90 minutes or more, right here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and iHeartRadio. And if you want to catch up on episodes you missed, just go anytime to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Coming up in our next half hour, the executive producer of WGN America's brand new series, Almost Paradise, our good friend Dean Devlin is back with us. And coming up at the top of the hour, Stephen Capsudo, the author of the brand new book, Alternate Channels, Queer Images on 20th Century Television. We'll get to those two gentlemen after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio, speaker, and TuneIn Radio. Together, serving over 40 million listeners around the world every month and growing. WTUNED Radio brings you 24/7 the Coronavirus News Channel. Get the latest reports on this pandemic, plus podcasts and other original content. That's the Coronavirus News Channel on TuneIn Radio. And don't forget that coming up later this month, TuneIn Radio will be the simulcast home of the brand new special, One World Together at Home, simulcast on ABC, CSNBC. That's on April 18th from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Welcome back to the second half hour of our Tamari Televised 90th Spectacular for this Monday of April 2020. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Great guests coming your way in the hour ahead. We invite you to be part of the program. Just go interactive. How? Use our phone, 646-652-2906, or get into our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. My next guest has had an amazing career in the world of film and television. He was one of the co-writers and creators of Stargate, the popular movie that became a big TV empire on Sci-Fi Channel, Showtime, and other places. And he's had a great run with other original shows on television, Leverage and The Librarians on TNT. His latest work that started a week ago on WGN America is called Almost Paradise. Think of Adventures in Paradise that gets a little out of kilter for a former DEA agent who just wants to get out of that business. The program runs tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern on WGN America. Joining us live for the third time in the history of this program, it's a pleasure to welcome back executive producer Dean Devlin. Dean, welcome back in.
Thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure. It's been quite a long time. How has Almost Paradise done this first week on the air?
It's been phenomenal. You know, I mean, this is a show that I've wanted to make for a long time, and we got to shoot it in the Philippines, and I didn't know how people would react to it, but the response has been overwhelming.
In fact, I was checking I checked the Facebook page for the show, and it's got nearly 10,000 followers. To get that in just less than a week is quite remarkable.
Yeah, especially the fans of Christian Kane, who call themselves the Kaniacs, they've been just an army of people supporting the show and talking about it. And, you know, it's great. This is my third show, third TV series with Christian Kane. And it's been a phenomenal partnership. And I think this one is our best one yet.
Dean, how did you get the idea for Almost Paradise? I have the feeling some people might think, especially if they've seen the reruns of Jane A. Mitchell's Adventures in Paradise, which are on YouTube all over the place, that there's a little bit of inspiration from that long ago series that actually started about almost over 60 years ago.
Well, actually, how it all began was on my honeymoon. My wife and I honeymooned in Hawaii, and I had on local television, and there was a show on the local news about how these civilians had captured a drug dealer because they got tired of waiting for the police. And it got me thinking a lot about island justice and island spirituality and the healing properties of Pacific Coast Islands. But the show never really, you know, went beyond those initial thoughts until years later when I was thinking about it. I said, you know, I'm actually half Filipino, and I've never done anything that explored that part of my heritage. So when I suddenly had that idea moved to the Philippines, then it got very exciting because, you know, this is the first TV series in history to be shot in the Philippines. And so much about the Philippines hasn't been seen, is not known. I'm sure most of your viewers or listeners, if they were asked about the Philippines, you know, mostly what they've heard is Imelda Marcos's shoes and Manny Pacquiao. And that's kind of about it for most people. So to be able to show the fact that there's some of the most beautiful resorts in the world in the Philippines, to show the food, the culture, that's what really put jet fuel into the project.
And also when people think of a show that has a Pacific Islander kind of feel, they think of shows shot in Hawaii like Hawaii Five-O, which just ended its decade-long run on the revival on CBS a week or so ago. Or they think of Adventure in Paradise that was actually shot on a lot of 20th Century Fox with some location work in Tahiti, but they don't think of the Philippines. When did you get the go-ahead to do it? Did you have to get the permission with whoever's like the Film and TV Commission in that part of the world to get the go-ahead before you approached WGN America or anybody else to take the show?
Well, you know, I I've been distributing some films out of the Philippines for the last 10 years. And so I started to realize that the level of talent, directors, writers, editors, cinematographers, you know, they really had upped their game the last 10 years. So I was very involved with that community through our, the distribution arm of our company. And when I finally realized that I could do this series there and employ a lot of this amazing talent that the rest of the world really hasn't seen, it really wasn't an issue. I mean, the Philippines was so inviting and gracious and wanting to make this happen that they really extended themselves.
When did you finally get the, was it, how long ago did you get the go-ahead from GN and from the Philippine folks to go ahead and finally do the series?
I originally brought the first script to WGN a little over a year and a half ago, and it took a long time to put together a deal that was going to work for everybody, because at that time, WGN really wasn't interested in doing original shows anymore. They had kind of abandoned doing original shows, and they were really acquiring them from other countries or reruns, et cetera. And it took a while for me to convince them that this would be the right show to do. And once they got on board, though, they could not have been better partners. I mean, they really embraced every part of the show, and they've really been terrific through this whole process.
A couple of people just joined our chat room, Dean. Simon Apple 04 by name. So welcome aboard. You have a question or comment for Dean? Don't be shy. Use the room or make the phone happen, 646-652-2906. Did you base the main character in Almost Paradise on someone you knew or someone somebody else knew?
You know, I've been watching some interviews with former DEA agents. And when I realized that they had a conflicted feeling about the work they'd been doing, it really kind of moved me, you know, that this is a war that we've launched for a long, long time. And the soldiers of that war are rarely celebrated. In fact, they're vilified. And so it just got me thinking about that type of character. You know, the funny thing is when I first started working on this, I actually talked to Christian Kane about it. And I had said to him at the time, I said, you know, it's too bad because you're actually perfect for this thing I'm writing. It's just you're about 5 years too young. Luckily for him, it took me 5 years to get the show up and running, so he graduated to the right age at the right time.
So explain the concept. Christian plays this former DA agent who is trying to get away from it all, thinks he is well, you go ahead and explain it.
Well, basically, he's a broken man. He had been a superstar in the DEA as a longtime undercover agent. But when his partner, the one person in the world he trusted, turned on him and tried to kill him, it kind of broke his spirit. It was the last straw. And he had a bit of a nervous breakdown and developed severe hypertension. And he was basically kicked out of the DEA. And in order for him to receive his benefits, he needed to find someplace where he could check in with a doctor and show that he is doing the things he's supposed to be doing to receive those checks. And he remembers a beach that he had seen, you know, over 15 years ago in the Philippines that was nothing but a white sand beach with some thatched huts. And he knew that the military base on the island had a little American area. So he thought, well, I could check in there and live on that beach. But when he gets to the beach, he discovers that 15 years later, some of the greatest resorts in the world had been built on that beach, and it was no longer this serene, peaceful place that he had in his mind. He also discovers that the rich and famous criminals from around the world go there to vacation. So as much as he wants to be Jason Bourne becoming Jimmy Buffett, the circumstances around him just won't allow it.
Yeah, it's not a lottery bill for sure.
No, I was just going to say, you know, we wanted to show the beauty of the island and these wonderful resorts, but at the end of the day, it's still a fun, kick-ass action show.
And that's what we're talking about, Almost Paradise. It's a brand-new action-adventure show filmed in the Philippines, the first television series, scripted TV series to be done in that part of the world. And we've got the executive producer of the show, Dean Devlin. You know him from such series as Leverage and The Librarians on TNT. He co-created Stargate. He was also one of the key people behind the blockbuster film Independence Day that always gets screened all over the place on AMC. all throughout the year. He's with us live in Los Angeles this half hour. On tomorrow, we'll be televised. So I'm going to have a hood you live from New York. Good to have you aboard this half hour, whether you're catching us on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, or the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you have a question or comment for Dean, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04. And by the way, episode 2 of Almost Paradise, it's on WGN America tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Friday on tomorrow, televised another 90-minute episode for you. We've got Nancy Picatore joining us. She's the chief executive officer of the brand-new smart TV service, Players TV. It's all about sports, entertainment, and lifestyle. We'll also talk about the growing number of sports stars, from LeBron James to Steph Curry, Dwayne Wade, Kevin Durant, and others who are now launching their own TV production companies, both scripted and unscripted programming. Very interesting trend going on, and Nancy will talk all about it. Plus, we've got a brand new series coming up this week on BYU TV, Brigham University's national TV network. It's Wayne Brady's Comedy IQ. Yes, the star of Let's Make a Deal, and Who's Lying in Any Way is involved with that series. It's all about Wayne raising a new group of very exciting comedy talent. We've got the executive producers, Michelle Collins and Kevin Dill. And finally, from the Henry Danger spinoff that started a week or two ago on Nickelodeon Danger Force, great executive producer Christopher Nowak. It's all coming up live on the show All About Television right here, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Dean, talk about the making of the series. How much talent did you use from the Philippines, not just on camera but off camera too?
Well, that's, I think, one of the most rewarding parts of making the show, in that the crew is 98% local Filipinos, and the cast, well, I'd say, about 80%. We outside of Christian Kane, we cast all the parts out of the Philippines. Our DP, Filipino, our production designer, everyone up and down the crew, costumes. Seven of the nine directors were Filipinos.
And what about diversity in terms of women, women writers, women directors, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, one of the fun things is that three of the episodes on the show are directed by women, Filipino women, and they're quite talented, these two women. But what's interesting is that in the Philippines, for the most part, they're known for doing romantic feature films. And so to see them getting to do action sequences, they were like a kid in a candy store. They were so excited to do fight scenes and car crashes and motorcycle chases. And they kept jumping up and down saying, no one ever lets us do that this year. So that was just a real treat.
You know, Dean, because we're involved in blockbuster movies of that nature, we just had recently the producer of Sci-Fi's new series, Vagrant Queen, which also is produced and directed and written by women. Jem Gerard, who did the show out of Cape Town, South Africa. And again, it just seems that we're seeing this incredible new movement of women, diverse women of color, directing shows that are action, adventure, sci-fi, genre-oriented. And it seems to be like it's a long overdue deal, but we're now seeing these women, this great new crop of talent really have at it and so far doing great.
Well, there's just been this explosion of diversity that's been wonderful. When I went to film school, there were maybe two women in the entire class. And last year, I taught at Chapman University in their film department, and I would say it was 80% women. So, I think there's this great explosion happening. And we see it on television and in movies, this wonderful explosion of diversity. But, what's kind of been left out of this explosion were the Filipinos. And as a Filipino-American, I really wanted to bring that to the fore. And so to be able to show Filipino talent, whether they're actors, directors, or cinematographers, just to really show how much amazing talent is there. But it's also not to say, oh, well, here's this other weird alien culture, but really to show how we're all part of a world culture and that we're all really, one race, and that's the human race.
Tell us some of the other actors who work with Christian on the series, what roles they play, and as we go along from episode to episode, how do their characters develop?
Well, this show is kind of divided between what I always said to the actors is the heart, the brains, and the soul. And to a very real degree, Christian Kane's character is the brains. He's got this wealth of experience that these local police officers couldn't have. But Samantha Rochelle, she plays Kai, and Kai is the heart of the show because she is a cop for all the right reasons. She joined because her mother had been a spiritual leader in the community. And when she passed away, she pledged to her mother that she would carry on the good work. She cares about the people that they serve, whether they're rich or poor. So she's really the heart of the show. And Ernesto is kind of the soul. You know, Ernesto, played by Art Acuña, he's a little bit older, a little bit wiser. He's been around a lot. He represents the spirituality of the island, the culture of the island. He likes to see himself as a supporting character. But if you tick him off, if you put him up in a corner, a very formidable person will emerge. And if you watch the episode tonight, you'll see that side of his character revealed.
How do you, you know, blend the action adventure, blend character development, and also blend, you know, being the Philippines itself being the star, like New York City was the star of Law and Order, and before that, Naked City and The Equalizer and so many other shows, that became its own character. So how do you blend all of that, the characters, the character development, the action adventure portion, and showcasing the culture and what makes the Philippines go, all, you know, episode by episode?
Well, I'm a big believer in three things in anything I do, whether it's a movie, a television show, a web series, a documentary. For me, life is very difficult, and so I like the entertainment that I make to be fun as possible. I'm also kind of addicted to that heroic kick-ass cheer moment. But at the same time, I'm really addicted to getting a little bit emotional when I watch my shows. You know, I want to be emotionally invested, and that tends to temper the first two items. In other words, if it's too silly and fun, then you can't really be emotionally anchored to it. If the kick-ass moment is just too wild, you're not emotionally invested. So you have to balance those three things for it to really work for me. And the way you balance that is through the emotional life of the characters. And in this case, the environment is one of the characters. It's one of the things that our characters fight for, that they believe in. And so the balance happens organically in that I can't get all three unless they balance. So when any one of them starts to distract from the other two, then we have to look at that balance again.
As you were putting episodes together, Dean, what was it like for you to see this possibility you've had for so long finally get realized, finally get filmed, and then finally edited together into these episodes?
Well, you know, that's probably the biggest surprise for me that I didn't foresee. You know, anytime I do a show, it's because I'm excited about it and you know, I can't wait to do it, and there's actors I want to work with and stories I want to tell. But putting this one together, I was surprised on how emotional I got. I was surprised how much it affected me. And I think it has to do with the Philippines and that angle of the show. But I've also been surprised by the reaction of other Filipino Americans. You know, it's kind of like this is a culture within the United States that's been starving, and this is the first meal they're being served, and to see this kind of emotional reaction from others and seeing it in myself in ways I didn't expect has been the biggest surprise of working on the show.
We're talking with Dean Devlin. He is the executive producer of the new WGN America series, Almost Paradise, the first television scripted series produced in the Philippines with a great cast and crew. And you can catch the second episode tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern time on WGN America. There's also another way you can catch episodes, too. We're going to talk about that shortly. If a question or comment remaining moments with Dean, make the phone ring, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up shortly, we have our classic trivia question of the week, and you have two prizes today in play. Great book on the front lines of the television war by Tony Hirashiki, a legendary war cameraman in Vietnam. And for the first time, the brand new book, Alternate Channels, Queer Images in 20th Century Television. And coming up at the top of the hour, we will have the author of that book with us live, Stephen Capsudo. Dean, for some time now, your production company, Electric Entertainment, has been doing a smart TV programming service called Electric Now. What does that consist of?
Well, it's primarily the shows that we've made and produced and some of the films that we've distributed and television shows we've distributed. But as it's been growing, we've been actually acquiring other products that seems to fit the style and vibe of the network. It's been a really fun project. It's offered for free to the public, but it does have commercials. And it's been a great way to kind of gather our fans together. You know, the people who loved Librarians suddenly discovered Leverage. People who discovered Leverage suddenly discovered The Triangle or Blank Slate or the movie Flyboys. So it's been nice to find one home where the people who like our stuff can aggregate.
Do you see it as an opportunity to commission original product for your network?
Well, that's our hope. You know, I mean, I don't know how large it can grow. You know, I think the whole world of OTT and AVOD channels is brand new. I think everyone's still trying to figure it out. You know, we've had SVOD for a while, these subscription services, and that's grown. But will the advertising-supported streaming services explode? I think they will. You know, we're kind of betting on that. So I don't know where the ceiling is on that financially, but if we could grow that network to the point where it earned enough revenue that we could do original programming, that would be my absolute heaven. I mean, to be able to make TV shows for my own channel I can't imagine anything sweeter.
Are you taking the original shows from other sources, from third-party sources?
We look at them when they fit. Sits nicely side by side. You know, I think one of the problems you have in this is when there's too many different types of shows on one of these networks, you're not quite sure why you should watch that one as opposed to something else. So we've really tried to keep the product on here fairly consistent in tone and in celebration of genre, so that, you know, if you come to the network, you kind of know what you're going to get.
Now, Almost Paradise is also running on Electric now. Does it run the same time as WGN America, or is it you get like a window where GN America does the first run, and then it goes right after, say, a day or two later on Electric now?
This was really a gift that WGN granted us to show the pilot for 1 week, you know, to try and get as many of our fans to see it, whether or not they had WGN. And of course, if they didn't have WGN, hopefully to inspire them to call their cable company and ask for it. so it was a promotional thing that WGN allowed us to do. Going forward, though, if people don't have WGN, you know, we highly encourage them to get the episodes on Amazon. Amazon's been a terrific partner for us over the years, and they have the shows made available for download. You know, we were so lucky that we were able to complete the season because, you know, during this whole pandemic, you know, our other show, The Outpost in Serbia, we have to shut down midway through. So we feel so blessed that we were able to complete the season, get it done in time. And, you know, we hope everybody has a chance to see it, whether it's on WGN or Amazon.
Outpost, I believe, is going to what, second or third season on the CW?
Yeah, which is our third season. We were able to get 5 episodes in the can before we got shut down, but, you know, we're really hoping that we can complete the season because it's a very exciting season, and we're dying to show it to people. But unfortunately, you know, like many productions, it had to end until it's safe to let people back to work.
Any word from the Philippines as to what is happening with the pandemic there? And when WGN in America says, or somebody says, get a second season together, how fast can you rev production back?
Well, I'll tell you what was so interesting shooting there. You know, I mean, here this is arguably a third world country, and yet they were so better prepared in dealing with the virus. You know, every day of our shoot, we were not allowed to go into any building, any restaurant, anywhere, into our hotels without someone coming and taking our temperature and asking us a question. If someone did have a fever, they were taken to a fever clinic where the fever was identified. And if they couldn't identify it, they were given COVID tests. So, you know, I have to really applaud the Philippines for how well they handled it while we were there. And now they're in lockdown, which I think is, you know, just an added on top of it. I think they're going to be very well prepared to come back, you know, once the crisis has abated. And I'm sure that at least for a time being, until proper vaccines are out, they'll continue those kind of protocols. But it was really interesting. I mean, even flying home, you know, I couldn't enter the airport without my temperature being taken. I had to be interviewed by medical professionals before they let me on the plane. They were really quite good about this.
I don't know if you heard, we had it in the news note at the top of the show, but CBS is going to do an episode of All Rise, their courtroom drama, which is on Monday nights, out of studio. They're going to go back in production for an episode they're doing in May, and it's all going to be done with using video conferencing tools, using Zoom and FaceTime and other things. and sort of be a sort of, here's how the characters are dealing with the pandemic and dealing with how do you do the legal system without being in the courtroom. So it'll be interesting to see if that triggers perhaps other series to do something, at least an episode or two, before they get the green light to go back in production, whether it's in Los Angeles or New York or wherever.
Well, you know, as they say, necessity is the mother of television. So I think we're all doing whatever we can to try and keep the production lines flowing.
Have you already thought, like, if I get a second season, this is where I want to take the show, this is where I want to take the characters? Do you already have it in your head or in the writer's, your writer's room or your director's room, where you want to go?
Yeah, you know, that was a thing that was especially we were feeling on set as we got near the finale this year. If you watch the whole season, you'll see that a very important storyline is resolved at the end. And so we all started bouncing off the walls going, well, if that's resolved, then what happens next? And then we started talking about it, and it got very exciting. You know, this is a group of people that really enjoy working together, whether it's in the writer's room here in L.A. or the production there, or the actors. You know, we're desperate to get back in there and keep this train running, because it's really more fun than anybody should be allowed to have with their clothes on.
Episode 2 of Almost Paradise. You can catch it tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on WGN America. Check the locals for where that network is available in your area on cable and satellite. Before you tell us about the phone line, here's where you go, WGNAmerica.com. That's WGNAmerica.com. And also, don't forget Dean's smart TV plumbing service with production company Entertainment. It's called Electric Now, and that's available on some smart TV sets and smart devices. It's also on such smart TV plumbing services as Stir and Zumo. For more details, go to the website of those particular places. But once again, Almost Paradise, Episode 2 tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern on WGN America. Dean Devlin, the executive producer of the series, thank you again for coming on. It's been a pleasure. Congratulations on getting a new series off the ground, and hopefully the start of a great, great run. And also a great run, too, for Electric Now. We'd love to have you back anytime.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. It was a real pleasure.
Same here, Dean. All the greatest. Take care. We'll see you, hopefully hear you soon.
Bye-bye.
Dean Devlin, executive producer of Almost Paradise, joining us live from Los Angeles. Now it's time for our classic trivia question feature. And first, I want to give you the answer to the question we've posed in this program over the last 2 weeks. What 1950s TV sitcom co-starred Natalie Wood? And we gave you another clue, the answer, also co-starred Faye Ray. The answer, Pride of the Family. It ran for a year, I believe, on NBC, starring Paul Harmon. It was produced by MCA TV from 1953 to 1954. Pride of the Family, that was the answer to our classic trivia question over the last 2 weeks. And now it's time for our new question, and we have two books in play. On the front lines of the television war, A Legendary War Cameraman in Vietnam by Yasushuni Tony Hirosiki, and now for the first time, Altered Channels, Clear Images on 20th Century Television by our next guest, Stephen Capsudo. And you can get both books if you know the answer to this question. What ABC sitcom of the last decade co-starred Jane Levy and Jeremy Sisto? What ABC sitcom for the last decade co-starred Jane Levy and Jeremy Sisto? If you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your full mailing address, so if you get the answer, we'll get the prize back to you as soon as possible. And if you missed the question a moment ago, we will repeat it before we go off the air over the course of the next half hour. And we'll also post it, if we don't get a winner by the end of today, tomorrow morning on Facebook under Simon Applebaum, and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. This is UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. So get in the game today, and all the very best. When we come back, how has the portrayal of gay, lesbian, transgender Americans been in the TV industry over the decades? And where is it at today, and where is it going? The author of Altered Channels, Stephen Capsudo, joins me here in New York after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio in the galaxy, www.blogtalkradiospeaker.com and tunein.com, together serving over 40 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget BTR Spreaker, your host for the Kings in the Morning. Every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, join Gene King and Company. That's Kings in the Morning tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. Don't forget TuneIn Radio is your home for the Coronavirus News Channel, 24/7 coverage of the pandemic. all around the world, plus original podcasts and other special programming. The Coronavirus News Channel, 24/7 on TuneIn.com. And remember, TuneIn.com is your simulcast home on radio for One World Together at Home. That's going to be carried on April 18th from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ABC, CBS, NBC, and maybe other networks. Hosted by Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Kimmel, and Jimmy Fallon. That's One World Together at Home. That's on Saturday, April 18th, live simulcast on TuneIn Radio with TuneIn.com. Welcome back to the final half hour of Tomorrow We Televise this Monday afternoon of April 2020. And welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Adler with you live from New York. If you're joining us, have a question or comment for our final guest today, make the phone ring, 646-652-2906. It's 646-652-2906. Numbers get anywhere, catch us across the country, around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and iHeartRadio. And remember, we have a chat room business for you, so if you shout out using the phone, use the room. Simon Apple 04 by name, you will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televise. And don't forget, you can connect over to the program by using Facebook Timeline. Go on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker, or TuneIn screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. My final guest today was the lead historical consultant on one of the most acclaimed programs of its kind in recent years. It was on Apple TV Plus earlier this winter, Visible Out on Television. And he's now the author of a brand new book that we are now offering through our classic trivia question segment, Alternate Channels, Queer Images of the 20th Century Television. Joining us live from New York, Stephen Capsudo. Stephen, thank you for coming on.
Hi, Simon. How are you doing?
Very fine, thank you. First of all, what's been the reaction from you from Apple TV series, Visible? What's been the reaction from you?
Oh, my gosh. It has just been such a positive. I have not seen a negative review of it anywhere. And it's so moving because, my role was I was very busy on it, but I didn't shape the final thing. I pointed them toward, clips that they might want to look at, shows they needed to know about it, throughout the history of LGBTQ images on television. But then they took all that and put it together with their interviews and just shaped something that is it's kind of like the history of LGBTQ people in America seen through the window of television, which is just kind of amazing.
How has that window changed or evolved throughout these decades? And where is it at now?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. So the first of all, my book, you've said it's a brand new book. It's actually a 20th anniversary edition of a book that came out in 2000, but it's been completely fact-checked and revised, and the original edition had no photos. This edition has about 100 photos, so it's very different from the original edition. And I started researching this back in the late 80s when I was a grad student. I was volunteering with an LGBTQ crisis hotline, a phone line, and we would get a lot of calls from, back then, particularly, all of LGBTQ people in general were invisible in the society, and to the extent that gay and lesbian people were visible, it was kind of terrifying, slanderous, negative stereotypes. And so we would get these calls from lesbian and gay teenagers, this is like 1986, 87, 88, saying they were contemplating suicide, that I'm gay and I'm thinking of ending my life. And what our clinical supervisor said, if the person is calm enough, ask them what they think our lives are like. What do they think they are, quote unquote, doomed to? And every time I asked a kid that, they said, I only know what I see on television. And then I checked through the logbooks, and I found that every other volunteer was getting that same answer. And so I thought, this needs to be looked at. And so I started interviewing older LGBT people about what the first images they remember seeing when they were growing up in the 50s and the 40s and the 30s. And just started compiling information. So it sort of went from invisibility to slanderous stereotypes. Like in the early to mid 70s, if you saw any kind of LGB or implicitly trans character on TV in a drama series, they were usually a serial killer or a child molester or, something terrifying like that. Which was also just as we were starting to fight for our rights in a big way. And so, we were saying we want our rights, and the public was seeing these images of us. So then we went through a period where the images of at least lesbian and gay characters, because the networks all through the 20th century were really uncomfortable labeling a character as bi or trans, but they were starting to do lesbian and gay images. And there was a period where, as part of the pushback against all those murderers and child molesters and terrorists, there was a period where the characters become so squeaky clean and noble that they're hardly human. right? And then finally in the 90s and heading into the 21st century, you get more of a range of characters, which is really what you should have, right? Is not everybody's a villain, not everybody's a hero. They're just complicated characters who happen to be, in the 20th century, mostly gay and lesbian characters. Toward the end of the century, you just start to get bi and trans characters. And they're you know, starting to be more well-rounded human characters who are allowed to do something other than come out in one episode and then disappear for the rest of the series.
By the way, we have somebody in our chat room, Bringing It Boy Yee. Welcome into the room. You have a question or a comment for our guest, put it in the room and make the call, 646-652-2906. You guys are listening to a number of audio clips that your publicist provided for it, and I got the sense that when the subject came up in television programming in the first two decades, 1950s, 1960s. It was mostly in nonfiction television. It was talk shows, discussion shows, documentaries. I remember CBS Reports in the 1960s did a very controversial homosexuality special. He was narrated by Mike Wallace.
Oh, it's nightmarish.
Shows like
that
The Open Mind, other. I'm sorry?
I said that CBS show from 67 is an hour-long nightmare, yes.
Yeah, and it was very controversial for its time for a lot of reasons. Why was that controversial for its time?
Well, I mean, there were a few things. One was, you know, it was generally considered that the experts on homosexuality was considered a mental illness, a really terrifying mental illness. There were psychiatrists saying, you know, if you don't nip it in the bud, this kid will grow up to be an arsonist and a rapist and, you know, a murderer, which is why you have all those violent characters on TV, because that's what the experts were saying our lives were like. So it was this thing that people were terrified of. And it was a vicious cycle, that people had to be in the closet because to be out was to be assumed to be a dangerous person, and you would lose your home, your job, your kids. And so the only visible people talking about us were the psychiatrists, who would go on talk shows to talk about how sick we were, and who seemed to not really be very clear about the difference between sexual orientation and gender identity and gender presentation. They just sort of had that all balled up. They thought that gay people, because they couldn't imagine anything other than heterosexuality, right? So they thought gay people deep down were just trans people who were heterosexual. Or conversely, they would see a trans person and say, oh, that's probably just a gay person trying to pass for straight. So they really were very confused. They weren't experts at all, but they were the only experts allowed on the air on these talk shows. Or you had the vice squad police talking about, you know, breaking up, you know, a ring of homosexuals is operating in our town and we're going to arrest them. You know. So, or clergy. That was the only people who were deemed fit to talk about us. And the big breakthrough is in the few talk shows that were willing to put us on the air and let us speak for ourselves, which was rare because it was assumed that we were mentally ill and that anything we had to say, this is 50s, 60s, really until like 73 when it's when homosexuality is declassified as a mental illness, that you know, we are thought of as being able to speak for ourselves and be taken somewhat seriously.
It seems that when it came up on these unscripted or talk discussion documentary programs, that there was either very clinical in terms of the discussion, or it was dark cloud, like these are aliens. These are not, you know, these are not people from our world. These are people from another world.
Yeah, and even on scripted shows, you could make jokes about LGBT people, but you couldn't portray them in any kind of explicit way. They were like those people off camera who we laugh at, right? And so it's the same thing you're describing, is that alienness, that otherness. And you really don't – that doesn't start to change with any frequency until about 1970. 1967, you get the first episode of there was a cop show called NYPD, which dealt in all kinds of controversial issues. And the very first episode is about this blackmail ring that is extorting money from closeted gay men in the city. And one of the characters is a gay activist who the cops go to for advice. And, you know, and you have a black cop who's drawing parallels between racism and homophobia. And so that's 67. That's like 20 years into the existence of television. And things don't really start to get better till around 77, 78, 79.
We're going to talk about them all, but I want to give credit to the people that made NYPD Blue. That was my favorite shows in the late 1960s. David Suskind, Arnold Pearl, Daniel Melnick were the people
that
made that show work.
It's an amazing show, and it's shot on the streets of New York, and they had all these major Broadway people. Not to be confused with NYPD Blue. Some people think of that. That's the 90s show. But this is NYPD,
yeah.
And if anybody can find it, it is worth watching. It's amazing.
It is available. I know some episodes are available on YouTube, including an episode that had, I believe, the first performance on television or anywhere by Al Pacino.
Yes, whose name they misspelled in the credits.
Mm-hmm.
He was that unfamous.
Amazing. But great, great series, wonderful acting, shot on like handheld cameras.
Yeah.
An amazing show for its time. We're speaking with Stephen Capsudo. He is the author of the new version of the book Alternate Channels, Queer Images on 20th Century TV. He is also the lead technical historical consultant for the critically acclaimed Apple TV Plus series Visible Out on Television, which is available on Apple TV Plus. It's available on most smart TV sets and smart devices. Stephen joins me here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Happy you are aboard as well for the promo about television. First of 2 minute episodes this week. We're also back on Friday as well. 3:30 New Pacific right here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio as well. We're also on the IR Radio Podcast Network. If you have a question or comment for Stephen, don't be shy. Make your phone go 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Many people think that the 1970s was the beginning of the turn, at least with scripted TV was concerned, because you had movies like That Certain Summer. You had episodes like the Medical Center one with Robert Reed, where he comes out and says, I want to be a woman, and things like that. Were they turning points or not?
Yeah, well, I mean, the big thing that changed was before about 1970, first of all, I mean, I'm sure your listeners know that the product on television is not the shows, it's the viewers, right? They're selling our eyes to the advertisers, except for maybe public TV. So the name of the game before about 1969, 1970 was to maximize your number of viewers so you could charge more for advertising. What happens around 69, 70 is the networks start looking at demographics. The Nielsen ratings start to slice by income and urban versus rural and so on, and the networks decided that if you're trying to sell cars and other big-ticket items, you really needed to target college-educated urban viewers. That's who they wanted. And so suddenly, they weren't as afraid of dealing with controversial issues, and in fact, controversial issues gave the shows cachet. So that's where the point where, you know, sitcoms switch from being the Beverly Hillbillies to being Norman Lear sitcoms like All in the Family, very issue-oriented. And so that's what gives permission to do something like a TV movie like That Certain Summer in 1972 or some of these other things right around 1972, one of the first portrayals of a non-mentally ill, non-violent lesbian character is around the same month as That Certain Summer, also 72, in an episode of Owen Marshall, Counselor at Law. And what's interesting about all these things, you know, before you mentioned the episode, the two-part Medical Center from 1975 with Robert Reed playing a trans woman who comes out to the wife and the son who don't take it well and is trying to convince former colleagues at this hospital to perform the surgery. Why you would want to have your top and bottom surgery done by people who've never done it, I don't know, but at least it allowed a script about the moral dilemma of this. And so the people say, well, why did they cast cisgender actors? You know, why is it Robert Reed in Medical Center? Why is it Vanessa Redgrave in the TV movie about the trans activist and athlete Renee Richards? Well, the networks in general, and this was also true about the early portrayals of gay people, if they think that the audience is going to be uncomfortable with subject matter, at least back then, they insisted on ideally star casting in the role, or at least, you know, a very familiar-looking character actor who people, so that it wouldn't seem quite as alien. And so what that meant was, of course, there were no trans celebrities other than, you know, maybe Renee Richards, but Renee was an athlete, not an actor, and Christine Jorgensen, who, yeah, did a nightclub act, but really wasn't an actor. And so you were left with these famous cis people playing these roles. What's worth noting, though, is that in many cases, the script writers were working with advisors who were trans activists, and some of the scripts are for the era very good, the Medical Center one in particular. It's not the way you would write it today. It's not the way you would cast it today. But for the era, it's very well written. The same thing with there was one series in the 20th century that had like 65 episodes where there's a major trans character played by Linda Gray, a cis woman playing a trans woman. But there are a couple of the scripts where I listen to the dialogue and I think, you just know there was a trans person involved in this, because these are the things I've heard trans people say about their experiences coming out.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, you mentioned All in the Family, and it was Norma Lear's genius that one of the first episodes had Philip Carey playing a gay man who's a friend of Archie, and they meet at a bar, and that's when Archie learns for the first time from Philip Carey's character, I'm gay.
Right.
And it just blows Archie's mind.
And that redefines how television shows dealt with gay characters. It's the coming out episode. That is the first coming out episode, where you have a character who you've never seen before and you will never see again, who we're told is a longtime friend of the leading character, who comes out to the leading character, who doesn't necessarily deal with it well. And, you know, by the end, usually in other shows, they reach a point of acceptance and then you never see the person again. But, of course, Archie Bunker never quite reaches a point of acceptance with anybody. But it's a brilliant piece of television. And All in the Family was doing these things at a time when other people weren't. They have that wonderful 1977 episode called Cousin Liz, which deals with, you know, the lack of support for gay people when their spouses die. Edith's cousin Liz dies, and they find out that the other quote-unquote old maid school teacher who she roomed with had been her partner for 25 years. And, of course, Edith, who's very kind-hearted, twigs to that and is very supportive, and, of course, Archie is not. But the question also comes up of, if it becomes known that the surviving spouse is a lesbian and a school teacher, will she lose her job, which was a hot issue in 77 when there were all these campaigns to get all the gay school teachers fired in multiple states.
When did things turn in scripted television to the point where you were not just able to cover subjects like what it is to be gay or lesbian or transgender, but you had gay, lesbian, and transgender people actually playing those roles? One that comes to mind for me is HBO's movie And the Band Played On, produced by Aaron Spelling.
Which is very good. But in terms of series television, it really takes a while to have the gay people not be, and again, 20th century TV, which is what the book is about, the trans content is minimal. I covered what there was, but there's just not a lot. In terms of gay and lesbian characters, usually they're there as secondary characters in other people's lives. They're the sounding board for the straight characters' problems. And where that changes, I suppose, is around the late 90s, early 2000s, a little bit. You have Ellen, where, you know, in the last couple of seasons, sort of the straight characters are the complication in her life rather than the other way around, which is kind of a neat reversal. And, you know, Queer as Folk and shows like that. And Queer as Folk, you did have openly gay actors playing the roles. I think one of the first I can't remember what the sequence is on Daddy's Girls versus My So-Called Life, but certainly one of the first important shows where you had a gay character, a gay actor playing a gay character that was partly based on his own life, was Wilson Cruz's character on My So-Called Life, where, you know, he talks about this in the documentary. He had done the pilot episode, decided that if he was going to play this gay teen character on the series, if it got picked up, he was going to probably have to come out to his family, and he got kicked out of his family's house, and they put that into the show. And after that episode aired, where Ricky gets kicked out on Christmas, as Wilson had a similar experience, his father phoned him and they reconciled. So, but that's really where things just start to change a little bit. And it's really only more recently that we have just casual inclusion where you can just say, all right, here are some characters and some of them are straight and some of them are gay and some of them are, you know, every category, and we're just going to tell stories about them. You know, I love the fact that there are so many stories now where it's never commented on. You know, Batwoman, you know, yes, she's a lesbian, and yes, there's the ex-girlfriend, and you have their stories, and but it's not like that's all they get to talk about, you know, or they just, what show just wrapped up, The Magicians, where I was like really terrified that something horrible was going to happen to the one gay character on the show, just because like so many gay characters get killed off these days, and I found the ending really satisfying, and it was a pleasant surprise. But you know, they never comment on his being gay. It's never "I have something to tell you" or "what is it like to be." It's just, you know, if he's involved with somebody, it's going to be a guy. You know, if Batwoman is involved with somebody, it's going to be a woman. Sense8 is fantastic. Sense8 is like one of the great examples, or Pose also, of the importance of having queer people in the writing room, or at least on the production, you know, as executive producers. Because, you know, if you look at a show like Sense8, which was on Netflix, I think, you have a trans woman in a relationship with a cis woman character, you have the male couple in Mexico, you have all these different permutations, and nobody feels the need to justify it except to the fact that the trans woman has this horribly, you know, violently homophobic family. But generally, the characters are just there, and the stories aren't about that. It's about their adventures as they're trying to prevent this evil thing from happening, and that's, you could never have done that in the 1970s, 80s, 90s, you could get it a little bit on British television. You know, so Tales of the City, which, you know, I think at one point or another, every U.S. network had considered as a series, and Armistead Maupin, who wrote the book, said, all right, but will John and Michael be allowed to kiss? And they said no, and he said, okay, I'm leaving. And finally, a British TV network produced it, and it aired here on PBS. But that's like the first time I had ever seen on American broadcast television a show that just casually said, yeah, here are a bunch of characters, and yeah, the landlady is trans, and these guys are gay, and this is a bi woman in a relationship with a lesbian, but it's never commented on, and that had never happened, certainly when I was growing up.
Yeah. It seems right now that we are in a far different era. We're in an era, for example, where an Ellen DeGeneres can do a daytime talk show, have her own production empire, do primetime shows like Game of Games on NBC. She's now working on shows for HBO Max. You now have programs in the scripted area like Orange is the New Black, Pose, for example. When Pose won the Peabody Award last year, I talked to Billy Porter and MJ Rodriguez, and the one I asked them was, what did you want this series to do? What did you want the audience to get from Pose? And they both said the same thing. We want our stories told honestly. And it turned out they have. And, of course,
what happens in Pose is interesting, because if I'm remembering right, the pilot and maybe the first regular production episode are written by Ryan Murphy, who is obviously not a trans woman of color. And they're good, and they're fine, and they set up the premise. But once you have it being actually written by people in the demographic group that it's about, the stories ring truer, and they're more interesting, and they are less like the stories we've seen on television before. So I think there's a lot to be said for allowing people to speak for themselves, and to have, you know, shows about queer people that aren't just being written by people outside of whatever group this show is about.
I'll tell you, Stephen, I wish we had more time to get into what Ryan Murphy is doing, what Greg Berlanti is doing, some of the things he's done with the superhero shows.
Amazing.
Like the lesbian relationship in Black Lightning, Batwoman, of course, which has a lesbian lead, et cetera. But one thing I wanted to get to before we leave today is ask you about what's the prospects for a television network that is solely devoted to gay and lesbian programming. We've had a number of shots in the last couple of decades. We had QTV, we had Here TV, we had Logo for a while that MTV sponsored. We have Reverie now, who's the management we've had on the show a year or so ago. What's your thoughts about the ability to have either an ad-supported or a premium network that is devoted to this kind of programming?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think thinking in terms of network is a little anachronistic, because who actually watches a show when it airs anyway anymore? I mean, some people do. I think my parents probably do. But not a lot of people do. And so I think it's more about platforms and production companies that are selling to platforms. I think Netflix has done some really interesting things. I think Apple TV, certainly with Visible and some other things, and Amazon Prime. But I don't know. Do we need another Logo or another Here? I think Here is wonderful. I like some of what I've seen of Logo. I mean, that's really, it's funny, because when I wrote the last chapter of the book, which I think I finished in early 2000, that was the prediction at the end of the book, is that once the internet becomes fast enough to stream high-quality video, this will all become about niche markets, that you won't have to attract 11, 12, 13 million viewers to survive as a show. And And I think there are some major platforms that are allowing indie production companies to create the shows that speak to their audience and then have distribution through some larger service.
I wish we had more time with this segment because there is so much ground that you can cover when you deal with a topic like this. But one thing is very clear. We have a far better environment, I think, for the gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual community than we've ever had, and hopefully there's a lot more to come, and we're more accepting of that.
Just one quick thing. Yeah, before we
sure.
go, most days on Twitter and on Facebook, I post a Today in Queer Television History feature. On Twitter, I am Stephen Capsuto, StevenCapsuto. On Facebook, just search for Alternate Channels and you'll find it. And the book is available on most ebook platforms and on a lot of the paperback is available through major vendors.
And once again, the book is called Alternate Channels, Queer Images on 20th Century TV. Stand by because we're going to give you a chance to get it again through our Classic Trivia Question of the Week. The name of the series is Visible Out on Television. It's one of the most acclaimed nonfiction series on television this year. Thanks to Apple TV Plus for making it. It's on Apple TV Plus, smart TV sets, smart devices. You can get that service. For more details online, www.apple.com, and then go to Apple TV Plus, and they'll give you all details. Visible Out on Television. If you haven't seen it, please do. It's one of the best TV series this year and much, much recommended. Stephen, thank you so much for coming on the program. I'd love to have you back before the year is out. There's so much more to cover, and I'm happy we were able to take a great stab at it today.
Thank you very much, Simon. Take care.
You too, and congratulations on Alternate Channels, the marvelous book, and all the very best of what you're doing.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Stephen Capsuto joining us live here in New York. And one more time, here's your opportunity to get a copy of Alternate Channels with our Classic Trivia Question of the Week. Here's the question. What ABC sitcom last decade co-starred Jane Levy and Jeremy Sisto? What ABC sitcom last decade co-starred Jane Levy and Jeremy Sisto? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, when you email, enclose your name and your full mailing address. And if you missed the question, we'll post it tomorrow morning if we need to on Facebook, Simon Applebaum, and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in, so do so and all the very best. What do you want to thank all of our guests for being with us today and all of you for tuning in? Remember, coming up on Friday, another 90-minute edition with Nancy Pignatore of Players TV, Michelle Collins and Kevin Dill from Wayne Brady's Comedy IQ premiere later this week on BYU TV, and Chris Manoa from the Nickelodeon series Danger Force. If you came in late on today's program or to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast on iTunes, Apple TV, Spreaker Podcast app, TuneIn.com, and iHeartRadio.com. Love to hear what you thought about the show today and your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter. Remember, we love to hear what you have to say, and we do respond because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, as those of Block Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and iHeartRadio. Our production associate, BTR's Candace Williams. Andy Toe is Block Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of BTR, Al Levy and Bob Charish. Tomorrow we televised and brought today by Audible.com, an Amazon company. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For 3 free audio books and 1 month trial, audibletrial.com/televised. Tomorrow we televise. I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. To all of our Jewish listeners, have a great start to your Passover this Wednesday. And whether you can't go to Seder or can't get matzah, please make it the best Seder you ever can do. And we'll catch all of you on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and the iRadio Podcast Network. Wherever you are, get your thoughts and prayers going. We will lick this pandemic sooner rather than later. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.